You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabach, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a man barely 6 feet tall, but a mountain of muscle, Pete Schwabach.
You know it. Welcome back to hour number two of Nightlight. Broadcasting statewide from our beautiful studios here in downtown Green Bay at City Deck Landing at WGBW. Riding shotgun is the lovable producer, Conrad.
Hello.
Well said. All right, so Rob Thomas is here. He is a Madison film critic and the newsletter editor for CityCast Madison, and we were talking about haunted places around Madison. Rob, Annie from Watertown says, is there still a house haunted? The two guys got killed in a canoe on the lake. Supposedly it's haunted. A canoe was hit by a boat in the late 70s, early 80s, as she recalls. And she says it was in Madison, actually. Does that sound familiar?
No. So they got hit on the lake.
It sounds like it.
The house is haunted?
Yeah.
I guess it's no fun being a ghost haunting the middle of a lake.
In October.
Yeah.
You're freaking out all the guys in waders.
Right.
And then Steve from the 608 says, actually, many years ago, a woman jumped to her death inside the Capitol from the ski wake in the dome. Am I reading that right? She says they closed it down since. I vaguely remember something like that, but not any details. Thank you, Steve and Annie, for being part of the conversation. Rob, there's a lot of other stuff going on. It's Chevy Chase's birthday today, Rob. He turns 81. Do you have a favorite Chevy Chase movie and a least favorite Chevy Chase movie?
Interesting. Well, I remember when I saw Fletch in 85, I thought that was the funniest movie ever made. I don't know if it holds up. Yeah, but I remember loving that movie from start to finish. Least favorite Chevy Chase movie. I don't know. I think I blocked them out of my mind. The vacation movies have all blurred together for me, like Star Wars.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say Vegas Vacation was maybe one of his worst. And The Invisible Man wasn't great. I remember that one. Or Memoirs of an Invisible Man, but I liked all the ridiculous ones like Fletch, Three Amigos, Caddyshack, Vacation is one of my all time favorite films.
Oh, sure.
Overall.
Yeah.
And I feel like he did a bad. You know what I did? I watched Seems Like Old Times recently, just kind of a nostalgia watch. I still liked it, like Charles Grodin and Goldie Hawn.
Yeah. Foul Play was good, him and Goldie Hawn.
Yes.
I don't know if it held up, but at the time I saw it, I liked it.
Yeah.
Was he a dog? Was he a movie where he turned it like a Shaggy DA or my
Hedgehogs? Something else. He was in something called Hedgehogs. He was in, remember the movie, Conrad, you pulled a clip from it.
Funny Farm.
That's right. Where he and his wife, Maggie Smith, not the one who just passed away, but a different one, moved to the country. And they became bored. And he had this dog named Yellow Dog, and it ran away, and you just saw it running across the prairie from time to time throughout the movie.
That doesn't sound too bad. I mean,
it was okay. And then he broke the record, and Conrad pulled a clip from this. We didn't get to it, but he goes into a local restaurant, and he's eating lamb fries, and he thinks they're delicious. And he breaks the record for eating lamb fries, only to find out when he's done that they are testicles.
That's right. I did see it on HBO.
Yeah.
Once upon a time.
Yeah. It had some moments. It wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. I think Fletch is great. And where do you rank? This is the anniversary as well this week of Goodfellas coming out in 1992, Rob. Where do you rank that in terms of mob films? I assume you liked it because it's a good film.
Oh yeah. But one of the best, I think. And I liked The Irishman quite a bit. I mean, all of Scorsese's Casino, I think I need to revisit. I liked it okay, but I think it was kind of a come down after Goodfellas.
I agree.
But I mean, Goodfellas, I mean, I don't think Sopranos would exist without Goodfellas. Just sort of that that take on mobsters. I think because like The Godfather was like kind of romanticizing it to some degree.
Yeah.
And then Goodfellas was like, no, this is a little more the romance and then the sort of the ugly reality behind that.
Yeah.
Yeah. The grit and yeah. So definitely. Yeah.
That's interesting. I thought because I felt the same way about Casino. And I think it's unfair to Casino because when I watched it about, I don't know, 8 years ago, maybe, it really is a good film. I mean, it's long.
Yeah.
And it's but it's based on true characters that I had read about. So it was nice to see that come to life, even though it wasn't quite as tight as Goodfellas, but yeah. It is a good film, and I need to watch The Irishman again because I didn't love it, but you and some other people whose opinions I respect are all like, no, I loved it, it was great. So I feel like I need to go back and watch that again. You guys have me doubting my own sensibilities.
I saw it in the theater, which might have helped because it's like, because it's 4 hours, right? I mean, it's a solid four hours. Yeah. It's quite a watch, especially if you're at home. But although I think when we watched it, my wife and I, we pretty much stuck through it the whole way through at home, too. I think it's definitely one of his best. And, you know, De Niro, I think, is much more hit and miss now than he was 20 years ago. But I think he's great in it. Yeah.
That's interesting. So do you put Goodfellas up with The Godfather or not quite there?
That's interesting. I think Godfather is like one of the great American films.
Right.
I guess I put Goodfellas there too, but it's not, I guess, because it's not really an epic kind of in the same way as Godfather. And then you put Godfather 2 next to it. I mean, that's hard to say. I'd have to watch them back to back. They're very different.
That's a great breakdown, though. You're right. It's not it's not the epic but I guess it is kind of hard to compare the two. I put them both up there, but you're right.
It'd be tough
to put anything ahead of Godfather, especially when it comes to mob movies or as far as some people are concerned, any movie, because some people think it's the greatest.
Absolutely.
So,
certainly, I think one of the great movies about America. Yeah.
Absolutely. My guest is Rob Thomas. Check out his work at CityCast Madison. He is the newsletter editor, and he has a Substack. Let's get to the Substack, Rob. You always have great stuff there, too. You wrote about a film called Matt and Mara. Sounds really good. You know, I was reading this. It reminded me of, like, movies, like, from the 90s, like Day Trippers a little bit Walking and Talking. Is that the kind of feel it has?
That's exactly the feel. Was it Kicking and Streaming, the one with Noah, kind of an early Noah Baumbach, where it's like,
you mentioned a lot
of smart people talking, and it was this, you know, these two friends, a man and woman, who are college friends who reconnect. It seems like 5 or 10 years later, and they have a lot of unresolved issues. And it was really funny, but it's also, you know, very detailed characters and just kind of hanging out with them for like 80 minutes. It had a one-time screening here a couple of weeks ago, but I bet it's probably on streaming by now or it will be pretty soon. So, that was a really good one. Yeah.
Yeah. You like that. I've put that one on my list. And then another one you wrote about, Look Into My Eyes.
Yeah. That's a cool documentary about psychics. Like people and their clients, and it kind of doesn't judge really. Like it doesn't. It's not like, are they real? Are they scam artists? It's just very much like what kind of people would do this for a living? Because a lot of times they're working with people who are grieving and want to reconnect with loved ones who have passed, and they facilitate that, or they sort of seem to. And it's super interesting. Like, I was not expecting to feel sympathy for these people, quite honestly, these psychics. Mm. And that one, again, I think is probably pretty close to being on streaming as well, on VOD. Okay. So that was really cool.
How did you find that one, Rob? Where did you see it?
Both those came to Madison, the UW Cinematheque. Fantastic free series.
Oh, they're amazing.
You know, and really kind of the only game in town comes to movies in downtown Madison, and they're all free. And they usually have a new movie Thursday night. This Thursday, they have the premiere of a new documentary about Brian Eno, which I would love to see. Mm. And I read that, like, it's a different, the film is playing in different cities, and it's a different version of the film in every city. So, like they recut it, I don't imagine how they would do that, but it sounds fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And then they show classics, like for Halloween, they're showing Halloween 3, which is the really crazy one. I don't know if you've ever seen that one about, it has nothing to do with Michael Myers. It's like killer masks and stuff like that. So a lot of times that's where I find some of these smaller movies. They're coming to town through the Cinematheque because they wouldn't play like, you know, a big multiplex. Yeah.
They book great. I love watching movies at Cinematheque. It's just, I think I wrote in a blog a few years ago, it smells like the movies in there. Mm-hmm. It's like there's old carpeting and seating, and it just has that great screen. And it just, it kind of just reeks of history in a good way. It's a great venue. Yes.
Yeah. They have great taste. And they, and like I said, they've started to program, you know, sort of high art films, but also sort of gems that, and you know, classic films, and they really pack them in for almost everything they show. It's like,
do they? Okay.
They're showing at Cinematheque, it's worth seeing, whatever it
and
is.
And it's free, you can't beat it. I mean,
yeah,
it's so great. Check out Rob's work at Not That Rob Thomas, Google that, and Substack, and his work will come up with the Substack. He does great work there as well. Does great work all around. Rob, so much fun catching up tonight. Thanks so much for your time, buddy.
This is great, Pete. Thanks so much.
Yeah, have a great night.
You too, man.
All right, that's Rob Thomas. CityCat, that's a great website. I he's been on the show maybe once or twice since he's taken over that position, but really informative and really cool site. I'll have to check out the podcast there as well. What didn't we get? You know, Nick Cannon's birthday is today.
Oh,
that was going to be my question, is how how many kids is too many kids?
Well, I think he's hit it probably.
Right.
I forgot, you know, what all the names are, and I don't want to be remembered.
Gosh, remember that?
I don't want to be remembered now.
We looked that up. I could not believe that.
Yeah.
The names were in, and he's got like 142 kids, I think it is, but they all, to have the elaborate names, the guy's got to have a crazy memory. All right, so I was going to talk about Andrew Garfield and Florence Pugh. That's not her name. They apparently went too long during a sex scene past the director yelling cut.
Yep.
And they claim they didn't hear him.
Yeah, I saw that news, the title. I was like, well, this seems interesting.
That could be a question. Who would you want to not hear the director yell cut if you were having a sex scene with? All right. Speaking of Cinematheque and the Wisconsin Film Festival in Madison, Ben Reiser is here next to talk more about films and different films than we just talked to. You're not going to want to miss that. Ben's always fun. This is Pete Schwab at Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network. All right. I got distracted. I almost started singing BTS because I love that song. And then Ed the Diver waved at me through the window. I didn't recognize him at first. So I had a crazy two things going on. Then I see Ben, our next guest, waiting in the wings patiently. Our question tonight is, what is something you're too embarrassed to do alone? And we've had some great text tonight. And I thought we had a new one. Well, I already read that one. Okay, it doesn't matter. We have a great show tomorrow night. Patrick O'Donnell will be here. He has the website copsandwriters.com, and he is a former Milwaukee police officer, and he loves Bruce Springsteen. This guy's got to be tops, Conrad. I can't wait to talk to him. And then our very own WGBW producer, Amanda Nimmer, will be here to talk about movies that traumatized her, it sounds like.
Yeah.
That'll be a good talk, too. But let's get to Ben. Always fun to talk to Ben. He's one of our Nightlight frequent flyers, and he is one of our favorites here as well. And we just talked about Cinematheque, and Ben plays a big role in Cinematheque as well. Let's bring him in. Ben, how are you?
I'm all right, Pete. How are you?
I am doing very well, thank you. You know, I thought of you the other day because I was reading about Diddy. And have you ever been, you're from New York. Have you ever been to one of his freak-offs?
No, I never got the invite.
Oh, rats.
Or happily, as the case may be.
You are a poor sap that moved to Madison and you missed out on the freak-offs in New York. You instead decided to raise a family and be very happy. So good for you.
Yeah, it's true. People can't believe I moved out of New York and live in Madison. And I try to explain that when you're living in New York, I mean, my life was walking my dogs 10 times a day, spending 3 hours trying to find a parking spot for my car every night with alternate side of the street. And, you know, people think it's like museums and Broadway shows and P. Diddy parties. But no, that's not the case when you're actually living there. I have a much better time in New York now that I go back and I'm a tourist.
Listen, it's interesting that you say that because I've been to P. Diddy parties. It is impossible to find parking at one of them. So you just have to Uber it. That's my recommendation. How are you, Ben?
I'm all right. Actually, I was listening to you and Rob Thomas. Yeah. And at first, I have to say two things. Number one, my mind is blown. This guy been reviewing movies for as long as he has. He hasn't seen Halloween. Rob, snap out of it. What's the matter with you? and I also have to say that I'm in the minority. Clear minority. And I say this to my, you know, film colleagues, and they're all like, what are you, crazy? But I prefer Casino to Goodfellas.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because they're both based on true stories. And like I told Rob, I don't know if you heard this. I've read a lot of books about the Spilotro brothers, and I know a ton of stuff about the Chicago Mob. I find it a fascinating organization. And for that reason, I probably was more invested in Casino, and I tried to judge it just on its own as a movie last time I watched it. Yeah, and I think I don't know if I like it better than Goodfellas, but it's a great movie.
Yeah. I don't know. Goodfellas doesn't hit me the way it seems to hit everybody else. I was a much bigger fan. I remember when it came out around the same time as the Coen Brothers movie, Miller's Crossing.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe you just said that. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, and everybody was going crazy for Goodfellas, and I was over there going, hey, but Miller's Crossing, this movie is blowing my mind. I want to see this a million times. And, you know, it didn't get the kind of acclaim that Goodfellas, not that it should be compared, but I go through this thing from time to time where two movies come out around the same time, and I always seem to be rooting for the one that nobody else is rooting for. I'll give you one example, but go ahead. Tell me about Miller's Crossing.
Well, I just watched it with my son, Joe, recently when he was home. I said, you got to watch Miller's Crossing. I've been saying this to him for 5 years. We finally watched it and he loved it. And I think if Goodfellas, just to be contrarian, I guess, is because it's based on something or true source material, whereas Miller's Crossing, as far as I know, is just the Coen brothers' brilliant creative minds. So maybe you go Goodfellas, but Miller's Crossing is one of my all-time favorite. And that Danny Boy scene with Albert Finney is incredible.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I need to watch it. I haven't watched it in a while, but I think I have the Blu-ray sitting around somewhere.
Yeah.
I'll tell you another pair of movies that I went on the opposing side of. Everybody loved the Harrison Ford version of The Fugitive when it came out.
Yeah.
Which I think is a fine movie.
Sure.
But around the same time, the Clint Eastwood movie, In the Line of Fire, came out. Man, do I love that movie so much. With John Malkovich as an assassin. Love that movie.
I remember you posted about that on Facebook a few months ago. Yeah, I think you guys were showing it. And I was like, In the Line of Fire. And I don't know, I had a bias against Clint Eastwood for a while because he had done a few movies where he's a really good actor, but he was kind of playing the same role. But that was a different role. And I did rewatch that because of your post. And I loved it. And John Malkovich is great. That's a really good movie.
Yeah, and Dermot Mulroney, or is it Dylan McDermott? I always get those two confused. I know.
They both have prominent Adam's apples. That's all I know.
Handsome guys.
Masculine fellows. Greg Liana checks in the stream. My sometime writing partner, who I love, and says, I prefer Miller's Crossing to Goodfellas. I remember talking about that with Greg when we would write.
Good man, Greg.
Yeah, he loves all things Coen Brothers anyway, as do I. Yeah. But, all right, so the whole reason that made me think of you was another Facebook post. You just saw The Joker, the second one, and as I read your post, Ben, I was like, oh, he's going to trash this. And then I kept reading, and part of what I love talking to you about is that you aren't afraid to just say, I know the critics hated this movie, and audiences, on Rotten Tomatoes, audiences and critics both give it a 33%. That's incredible. And you liked it. Tell me, please, why should I see this?
Well, I don't understand. I understand the audience reaction, because this is not a movie to see if you're some huge comic book movie fan and were a huge fan of the first Joker. I liked the first Joker. I remember Jim Healy, who you know, another Cinematheque guy, and I went to see the Joker, the first one, when it came out, and he hated it. I thought it was all right. Ultimately, I got annoyed with it because it's taking so much from Scorsese and so much from King of Comedy that I was like, I couldn't understand why, okay, you're remaking King of Comedy, kind of, but not really. And I didn't really understand the point of it, but I thought compared to, and putting it in context, it was at a time when DC was putting out what I think were some of the worst comic book movies ever. You know, it was like Aquaman and, those Superman movies, like Justice League Superman versus Batman.
Yes.
Unbelievably awful. And I at least thought, well, okay, this is somebody trying to do something different with these comic book, with the world of Batman.
Yes.
And I thought, it's not great, but I always love Joaquin Phoenix. I thought he gave a great performance. I thought it was interesting enough, took me through it, and I had no problem with it. And then there was all that, there was all that controversy about it. I'm still not exactly clear what the controversy about the first Joker is, except
hey,
that
Ben,
I
hate to do this as you get rolling. We got to do a quick thing. Let's pick it up here when we get back. You're not going to want to miss this, folks. Ben's opinions are awesome. And we'll get into them more after award-winning news from Civic Media. This is Peach Wabba and Nightlight. We'll be right back. So just
you're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back. Talking about the Joker, Foley Adu, that means... assume sequel with Ben Reiser from UW Cinematheque and the Wisconsin Film Festival. Did you hear us talking about Cinematheque, Ben, right before Rob left?
I did.
Uh-oh. Yes. Did we say the wrong
thing? No, it was great. Thank you.
Listen, continue with the Joker because I liked what you were saying. And it is kind of a polarizing movie among people who I respect. Some like it, some hate it.
Well, let me first say that I looked up Foley Adu today, and it's not sequel. It's it's the French term for shared psychosis, which makes sense for this movie.
Is that true?
Joaquin Phoenix and Lady Gaga's characters sort of share the same psychosis.
Okay.
But anyway, so I saw Joker. I thought it was fine. I watched it again fairly recently because my wife had never seen it. She's like, I've never seen this movie. I said, okay, let's put it on. She liked it too. But then this one came out, got the terrible reviews. I heard things about people walking out. Then I got a text from my friend again, Jim Healy, who didn't like the first one. And he said, I got to tell you, I just went to see the new Joker movie. There were five people in the IMAX theater.
Oh, wow.
Two of them walked out halfway through, but I thought it was the most satisfying sequel I've seen in maybe forever.
What?
And so that intrigued me because I wasn't actually planning on rushing out to see it, but I was like, oh, okay, if Healy liked it, I'll go check it out. And really, I think it's a very, very good movie on its own terms. Now, do I understand why anybody walking in there thinking they're going to get a comic book movie or a super villain movie would be shocked and disgusted and walk out? Yes. I mean, it's a long, very grim, very serious prison drama. Courtroom drama and musical, three things that you don't know. I mean, the musical part, you're like, wow, how does that fit with those other two? But it kind of works. But none of it is a comic book movie in any way, shape, or form. There's none of that comic book violence. There's none of those sort of plot twists or anything like that. It's really just a very serious drama, like something from the 1930s or the 1950s. It's I was stunned and in a good way by what Todd Phillips, the writer-director, and Joaquin Phoenix came up with. I'm assuming they were given sort of carte blanche, like a blank check, like, hey, you guys scored big with this first one, do whatever you want for the second one. And they went in a direction that I don't think anyone was expecting. I am surprised that more critics haven't appreciated it for what it is. I don't know what's up with critics these days, but I get why a typical DC comic book audience would walk into this and really be angry and want their money back. And for that reason alone, I kind of like it.
For the record, I think when you say musicals, prison, I thought Shawshank Redemption could have used a few dance numbers. That's just me, you know, spice it up a little bit.
Morgan Freeman and Tim Robbins. Tim Robbins. A duet. It would be great. Yeah, a
couple Canes, you know. Yeah. So, all right. Well, that's interesting. Now I have to see it because you're the first person, I have to be honest, that I'm sure there are other people that liked it, but you're the first person that I really, whose opinion I really value that I'm like, oh man, maybe there's something here. So I'll go into it now, not expecting to hate it, but maybe, I don't know. I'll check it out.
I'm surprised by how many people I read and critics saying it's a train wreck. This movie is a very, very well-made movie on purely cinematic terms. It's beautiful looking. It sounds terrific. The performances are wonderful. I don't get this whole train wreck thing. It's so confusing to me, but you know, maybe I'm out of my mind. I do have a bad cold. I could be on cold meds and that could be the whole, that could be the whole reason I like it. Who knows?
Maybe I'll load up on some NyQuil before I head into the,
do it.
The theater. Have you seen Wolfs?
I watched it today because you mentioned you had seen it. Okay. Like, oh, let me check this out. I've been meaning to watch it. What do you think about Wolfs?
Very mediocre. I didn't hate it, but I didn't.
Yeah.
I can't stand the comedy between, it's like Brad Pitt, George Clooney comedy. Not these two characters. I thought it was a really interesting way into the story, how that happened. But it was just kind of their little jokes. I'm just done with friends doing movies together because they want to hang out. And that's why the vibe I got through the whole film. Having said that, I didn't hate it. It kept my interest, but I don't know.
No, I'm with you in that, you know, you get there sparring for the first 10 minutes and you're already like, okay, I've got this now. Let's take these characters somewhere else with their relationship at least, you know?
Right.
Please don't tell me I'm going to sit through 2 hours of the two of them having this level of sort of semi-hostile banter with each other, but it just keeps going like that. Yeah, right. And then occasionally, you know, there's the occasional action sequence or chase sequence thrown in there for sort of, you know, giving it that John Wick vibe occasionally, but not enough of that. And yeah, you're right. It's very much, you're seeing George Clooney and Brad Pitt, and we've seen them do this, you know, to much better effect in those Steven Soderbergh Ocean's movies. So what do we need this for?
I don't like those either, but I will say,
oh, you don't? Okay.
You know, no, but I'll say this. I didn't mind. I didn't like, I liked that there wasn't too much action. It was kind of, it was a decent story, but here's a movie you just reminded me of that I saw. I don't know if you saw The Instigators.
Yes. That one I liked a lot more.
You know what? I liked the first 30 minutes, Ben. And then when they got in that car chase, where the cops, it's like the Blues Brothers chase. They're going through the parks. I'm like, this just totally took me out of this movie. I kind of was into it. And Casey Affleck's asking her out. And there's cop cars flying over the main car and shooting. It's like, no, that's not what would happen. That's not even remotely plausible.
I don't remember much about it except that when I watched it, I was like, oh, this is, I think I had read bad things about that one too. And I thought, this isn't bad. I don't know. Casey Affleck, Matt Damon.
Were you on cold meds when you watched that one too?
I'm always on cold meds. That's how I watch my movies.
And I'm not sure if we talked about Rebel Ridge.
No, I don't know that we have. I haven't been on in a while, Pete, you know.
Yeah.
But
you were Rebel not Ridge, in Nightlight Jail, if that's what you're insinuating.
Rebel Ridge, I really, really loved. I recommend that to everybody that asks me what they can watch on Netflix. This guy, Jeremy Saulnier, the director, has made a bunch of movies that everyone else loves that I think are okay, but this one really knocked me out.
Yeah, I was like, when I first started watching it, Ben, I was thinking it was going the Rambo route, and then it kind of went more of a...
A Jack Reacher.
Yes, a smarter Jack Reacher. I like Reacher, but when I know he's big and muscular, but you still can't walk towards guys shooting at you. Like this
actor and this character, like, give me 10 more of these movies.
Yes.
I want to watch this guy every night.
Me too. I loved it. And without a spoiler alert, I don't know if we can do this, but the ending, did you think was going on there? It didn't bother me. It was a little ambiguous, but I didn't know what to make of it.
I think, you know, I think he's exhausted. Here's the thing, reading after seeing the movie twice, I then went back and started reading things the director had said, and he talked about the idea, and he's made other action movies where plenty of people die. And I think he said that one of the main motivations to make this movie, he wanted to see if he could make an action movie that was as exciting and as tense as anything he's made, but without killing a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And I think he nailed it.
Go ahead.
No, I just think like it checked off all my action thriller boxes without a high body count. Or really any, there's a small body count, but not nearly as what you'd think, especially in that climax.
That, you know, that's the reason I liked it. It was realistic mm-hmm. too, in that 40 people don't die in one day when there's a standoff or something. Yeah. It had a believability to it that I really liked. And I liked the main actor, Pierre, something or other, but just that he's terrific. He was downplaying everything. He was playing it very real.
And I can't say enough good things about Don Johnson in the late stages of his career.
Yeah.
He's constantly showing up. He was in that Watchmen series on HBO, did a great job. Every time I see Don Johnson, I'm like, man, why don't I see him more often these days? He's so good.
Yeah, he is good. I'm a fan. And like you said, as he gets older too, mm-hmm. you saw another Netflix film you liked and you would recommend, I believe, What's Inside?
It's What's Inside. It's October. We're talking about scary movies, yeah. Even if Rob Thomas hasn't seen any. this is a new. I would say it's a horror movie. It's a thriller. It's a tricky sci-fi. I don't want to spoil it. It's about a bunch of friends or frenemies who get together for a sort of a college reunion on the eve of one of their one of them is getting married, and they all arrive at this big house, and one of them has brought this very high-tech game with him, and they all play this game, and it all takes place on this one night, and this game is insane, and the consequences are very serious. But it's very tricky. It's very fast-moving to the point where I was like, I'm having a hard time keeping up with this movie, but and I don't know if it sticks the landing, but it's a very entertaining and very twisty couple of hours. I would recommend it.
And it's on Netflix.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. And I think it was a big hit at Sundance, and then Netflix grabbed it. Spent a lot of money on it to put it straight to Netflix. And that's too bad, because I like to see my movies in theaters, but
right.
The state of theaters these days, I'm not complaining. It's most of the time I have a better time at home these days.
It got really good reviews. And I like that there's no huge stars in it. I love that.
Yeah. I don't know. I felt like this movie is made by and for two generations younger than me. You know, all the people in it, I don't know who they are. It deals a lot with technology and with like social media apps and those kinds of things. And it almost didn't feel like a movie to me at first. It felt like some kind of new hybrid form that was kind of like more like a YouTube video. And I know there's plenty of movies where it's like, oh, the whole thing is a computer screen, and we're in this cool thing now, or the whole thing takes place on my phone. This isn't that, but it's very, very fast moving and very, a lot of fancy editing and a lot of interesting camera work. Check it out. We should talk about it once you see it.
I absolutely will, before Halloween. My guest is Ben Reiser. He does great work at UW Cinematheque in Madison, where the movies are free and the screen is amazing. Check it out right there on the UW campus. And he does great work for the Wisconsin Film Festival as well. And we're talking movies tonight. This was also, Ben, the anniversary of The Color of Money coming out. And this is a film, I don't know, I assume you've seen it, because you and Healy both seem like you guys have seen everything, but I saw this when I was probably 20 when it came out, I don't know, or 16, whatever mm-hmm. it was, but I didn't get it. I wasn't a huge fan, probably because I wanted more action or something, but I rewatched it probably about 7 or 8 years ago and really liked it. How do you feel about The Color of Money?
I've always loved it. And you were talking about Martin Scorsese earlier, Rob, and then we brought it up again. But I always say that my two favorite Martin Scorsese movies are the ones that are sort of, not his signature things, Color of Money and After Hours. Give me those two.
Love After Hours.
You can have all the mob movies and all the other things. I love Color of Money. I think that's a period of Paul Newman's career, which is, I think, my favorite part of his career is Color of Money and The Verdict. The Verdict's a movie I would like to watch every day.
Flawless.
Cannot get enough of that movie. And Color Money's right up there. And it's Tom Cruise, you know, maybe before he believed all of his own hype. I think it's a really good Tom Cruise performance. It's a great sequel to The Hustler. The Hustler is a great movie, but
right.
here's blasphemy I'm about to say. I think I prefer Color of Money to The Hustler.
I think that was like post, as far as Tom Cruise, maybe right after Top Gun or right before it, maybe?
Yeah.
Pre-cocktail, probably, post-cocktail. Right around there, yeah. But,
I think it must have been pre-cocktail.
All right. So I want to ask you, too, since you heard some of what I was talking about with Rob, and maybe we can talk about this after the break. Okay. Francis Ford Coppola, we'll talk about Megalopolis or what you've heard and what everybody's hearing. And then I want to ask you about Rumblefish, if you remember anything about that film, because he calls that his favorite film. And because of that, I rewatched it like 2 days ago. So we'll talk about that and a lot of other stuff. Ben's going to help me close the show down. That'll be fun. Yeah. All right.
I'll do that with you.
All right. Fantastic. It's Peach Wobbin and Nightlight talking to Ben Reiser on the Civic Media Radio Network. Crawford County. Conrad, we haven't heard from Ross in a while. Good to hear from you, Ross. He says, just want to thank you and Rob Thomas for turning me on to that Eno documentary. I would not have even known about it. I keep forgetting about that Cinematheque Theater. Well, there you go.
Mm-hmm. I can't remember. Did you, Rob, talk about the fact that every time this movie is shown, it's different?
Yes. Rob mentioned that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's pretty interesting. Well, there you go. Thank you, Ross, for the text, and definitely check out Cinematheque. All right. Before I ask you my next question, Ben, have you ever seen, I said before, my partner Greg Liana texted in that he likes Miller's Crossing more than Goodfellas. Have you ever seen the original Meet the Parents?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. The indie? I mean, Greg's version.
Oh.
He started that whole franchise.
Right. Yes. You've told me about that. But no, I've never gotten to, can one see this movie?
He's just starting to get it back out there. Played the Pickwick outside Chicago, I think last week. And there's a book coming out about the whole saga. I mean, there's so much drama involved in getting that to the big screen, the Universal version. But his version is so much funnier and darker than the Ben Stiller one. As funny as that was too, but I recommend it. And I'll find out where you can see it. You guys should check it out. I think you'd really enjoy it.
Yeah, I like the Ben Stiller one. I mean, the sequels, not so much.
Right, right. All right, so we were talking about Megalopolis. You said you heard it was terrible. Critics panned it. It was kind of a disappointment at the box office. What have you heard? Is it just a mess?
Well, you said a friend of mine mentioned that it was unwatchable, but it's I got plenty of friends who tell me stuff all the time and I don't care. But this was Jim Healy and Mike King on the last time I spoke to both of them had both seen it, and they were both like, it's just bad. Like, there's just nothing interesting about it. And then I've also heard that it's so artificial, that everything is digital. Remember that movie Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow came out maybe 10, 15 years ago, like this sort of the start of CGI, where they had actors and everything else in the movie was like some kind of green screen thing, almost like this. I know every Star Wars movie is the same to you, but like the second set of Star Wars movies that George Lucas made, where it just seemed like he was just in it for the digital set design and nothing else. He didn't really want to tell any stories. And like, again, it's like actors up against a completely artificial world. So apparently this is like watching, I guess, like screensavers or something, you know, where it's like Adam Driver and just like in a completely artificial environment that just doesn't feel like anything that you want to, that is interesting to look at even. I'll probably still see it this week. I almost saw it today, but as you can hear, I'm still getting over this cold. And I thought, let me give myself another day before I plunge into this thing, which might not be the most pleasant viewing experience.
When it first came out, or I read about it a few months ago, that it was his passion project, and he put $100 million of his own money in it. I thought, I read it wrong, and I thought, is he remaking Metropolis or something? I didn't know, and I'm like, Megalopolis. Yeah. What do you think about Rumblefish? I watched this a couple nights ago because I had kind of forgotten about it, and Coppola says that's his favorite film.
Yeah, he made those two S.E. Hinton movies, right? He made Rumblefish and Outsiders, I think, in the same year. Like right at one, right after the other. I can't remember which one came first. And the thing that I most remember, I saw them both in theaters when they came out. I was seeing everything at that time in my life. I guess I still am.
Yeah.
But what I remember most about Rumblefish is the sort of the visual gimmick where it's black and white, except for the colored fish, you know, and the occasional little pops of color, which I thought was nice, but nothing else about it really registered with me as particularly exciting or interesting. I mean, you know, it's true. I think you mentioned earlier that sometimes filmmakers aren't the best judge of their own, or maybe Rob said it, aren't the best judge of their own material. But if you've made the Godfather movies and what I think is Coppola's best movie, The Conversation, and certainly Great Apocalypse movie. Now, and I'm even a fan of some of Coppola's later work, his Dracula movie, his part of the New York Stories movie, which everyone thinks is terrible. I think it's not bad. I don't think Godfather 3 is the worst movie in the world or anything like that. You know, the last two or three movies that he's made, which have barely been released and you can watch on Amazon now, are, you know, as Coppola himself has said, he's tried to go back and start making movies as if he was a film student, to sort of unlearn everything that he learned in the business and get back into this spirit of like making movies, you know, just by the seat of your pants or just without any, I don't know, professionalism. Right. I don't know what he would say.
Know-how.
But he talks about, I think he's much more interested in experimenting like a film student would, like sort of relearning how to make movies all over again from a different perspective, which, you know, good for him. And
yeah,
he wants to spend his money on it. I mean, I guess it's no crazier than Kevin Costner spending equal amounts of money on this Horizon series.
Yeah.
Have you seen that one?
I started like 30 minutes in. I'm like, wow, I'm only 1/6 of the way. And I didn't hate it, but it was like, I had the reviews in the back of my head and the fact that I was kind of bored. And I was just like, I'll maybe go back to it because I do want to see it. And I didn't love Yellowstone. I liked the two follow-ups or the prequels, but I don't know. Maybe we could talk about that next time you're here, Ben. This was really fun, buddy. Thanks for being on the show tonight.
Yeah, let's do it again anytime you want.
All right. I will keep that in mind and take care of yourself. We'll always have the freak offs and get rid of that cold. Nobody's going to want to freak off with you. All right. That's Ben Reiser. Check out UW Cinematheque. Amazing films, and they're free, folks, right there on campus at UW Madison. And check out the Wisconsin Film Festival. Greg Liana, check out the Wisconsin Film Festival. Meet the Parents would be a great screening, the original, at the Wisconsin Film Festival. Nobody listens to me, but I'll see what I can do, Greg. All right. Thanks to my guests. Thanks to Ben Reiser and Rob Thomas. This has been White Guy Film Talk tonight on behalf of the lovable producer, Conrad. We'll be back tomorrow night. Patrick O'Donnell is here, former cop and founder of the copsandwriters.com website and social media expert and WGBW producer. Amanda Nimmer will be here talking about traumatic movies. It's Halloween season. That's what we do. We'll be back tomorrow night. Thanks for being with me, folks. Thanks for all your texts. This is Pete Schwamba signing off. Good night, Wisconsin. Just another night, another
vision of love. You feel joy, you feel pain, 'cause nothing will be. The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.